This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Scholar and activist Pauli Murray grew up in what is now southwest central Durham. She was fundamentally shaped by the city's history and culture. And she, in turn, left a lasting mark on the city. Her childhood home was recently declared a national treasure and may soon be transformed to a national historic site. A new exhibit opening tonight examines Pauli Murray's relationship with Durham and looks at the many roles she played in the community. It's called Pauli Murray, Imp, Crusader, Dude, Priest. It's on view at the Scrap Exchange through December. We're going to get a preview of the house and the exhibit today, and I'm joined first by Barbara Lau. Barbara's director of the Pauli Murray Project at the Duke Human Rights Center. Welcome back, Barbara.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
This is what we do all the time when I talk to you about Pauli Murray. Remind us who she is, was.
Pauli Murray was a 20th century human rights activist. I like to think of her now as the most important human rights activist in the 20th century you've never heard of, but we're changing that. She was one of the founders of the National Organization for Women. She was the first African-American woman to be named an Episcopal priest and was actually recently named an Episcopal saint. She was a writer. She was a poet. She was a very outspoken person, a very unique individual who, I think, as you said in your intro, was very shaped by early Durham and her family here. Went on, published 5 books, has multiple degrees in law, in divinity, and in English.
And every time, you're on the show, and every time we talk about Pauli Murray, I do a little more research and I find another. She was Deputy Attorney General in the state of California in 1945.
Right. So after she graduated from Howard at the top of her class, she earned a special fellowship, which you would usually take to go to do further work in the law. And she tried to go to Harvard because that's where all of the other men in her class would have gone. So she applied to Harvard, and the first letter came back, Mr. Pauli Murray. Well, once they figured out she was a woman, they said, I'm sorry, we can't admit you because of your gender. So she took her fellowship and went to the University of California, Berkeley's Bolt School of Law, which brought her out to California. And while she was there, she met all sorts of people and, right, became the first assistant attorney general.
She would have gone to UNC Law School, but there her race was the thing that kept her barred from that school in 1938.
That's right.
Anyway, her home right around the corner. She's just about a mile away from here on Carroll Street in Durham. And let's listen to this clip from a 1976 interview with Pauli Murray talking about her childhood home.
I grew up in grandfather's house, Grandfather Fitzgerald's house. Mm-hmm. And it's still there, by the way, on Carroll Street. But I lived in grandfather's house, which meant more or less that I was a very small child growing up with 4 to 5 very settled adults. Living in grandfather's house and being a part of a larger family, an extended family. In those days, the Fitzgeralds were legion. The Fitzgeralds and their kin were legion. Gave me, I think, a sense of real roots and security. On the other hand, I had a different name. I had my own family, of which I was very conscious of. And in some ways, I was alien. You know, I felt very much a part of the house. I was made to feel a part of the family. I knew that I was a Fitzgerald descendant, and yet there was always this longing for my family, my brothers and sisters, and a kind of, I guess, sadness about not having parents.
Pauli Murray from an interview in 1976. Barbara Lau from the Pauli Murray Foundation is here now talking with us about recent developments in her story and her house in Durham. So tell us more about the extended family and the Fitzgeralds in Durham.
So Robert Fitzgerald came south after serving in both the Army and the Navy on behalf of the Union during the Civil War. He came to fight what he called the Second War, the War Against Ignorance. So he came as a teacher and an activist, and first to Hillsboro, then convincing his entire family, including his white mother and his African-American father and his siblings, to move from Pennsylvania here to North Carolina, and they eventually came to Durham. His brother was a very famous brickmaker. He became Richard Fitzgerald. Richard became the first president and was one of the founders of Mechanics and Farmers Bank and was a very prosperous businessman. On the other hand, Robert was injured during the war. So by the time he built that house she was talking about, he was actually blind. So she talks about it. He built it by touch and by feel. And one of her jobs as a small child was to read the paper to him every morning because he couldn't see to read it himself. But very strong family. The woman who raised her, her Aunt Pauline, for whom she was named, was a school teacher. Her Aunt Sally was a school teacher. Their mother, Cornelia, her grandmother, a very strong personality. Big Episcopalians, helped to found St. Titus Church here. But a family in which it was important to be who you were going to be. And I think she felt that while she felt alien, she also knew that she should be who she was. She shouldn't conform to what other people thought she should be.
And that house, as you say, was belonged to a family that was very well known in Durham at the time. We always have to revive her memory when we talk about Pauline Murray. But tell us now, because there is some exciting news about the restoration of the house and its place in our historic landscape.
Absolutely. So we're excited to be embarking on this partnership with Iron Mountain, which I think we'll hear about. But we've actually this summer begun to restore the house. So finally, after the city fixed a water problem in the cemetery behind the house that had been degrading the foundation, we were able to begin. And right now, as we speak, they're peeling back the aluminum siding to reveal the wood siding below. We're removing a lot of materials that were added to the house in the interior and, in fact, uncovering these amazing rooms that are pink and green and blue. But we're able to begin to take what we call the non-historic materials away so that we can really evaluate what's there and begin that transformation. And we have had some great news this week. The process of becoming a National Historic Landmark is long and arduous, but the first step is sending a letter saying, here, this is a place we think is important to the National Park Service. And at that point, they just tell you either, no, we don't think that's ever going to make it, or, yes, that's interesting. Please send us a full application. So it was just this week that we got news that the Park Service is willing to entertain that application. So we really look forward to that down the line.
That first screen, right? And it's already a National Historic Treasure. Tell us what that means and when that happened.
Right. So we're a National Treasure, which is a designation by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. What it really means is you're important and you're in peril. It's a program to try to call attention to important sites around the United States. And we were named a National Treasure in March of just this year.
And you talked about the partnership that helped bring all of this into being. So we're joined now by Alicia Perdue. She's the manager of community engagement at Iron Mountain. And that's a storage and information management company that's partnering with the Pauline Murray Project to restore Pauline's home. Alicia, welcome. Good to have you here.
Great to be here. We were so excited to hear about the Pauline Murray story. We, too, learned about it in March from the blog on the National Historic Trust for Preservation site. And we were immediately intrigued. We wanted to learn more. Like many of us, we were also a little bewildered why we had not heard of somebody with so many historical and cultural contributions and milestones. So we did some digging. We were impressed. She was an activist, an author. She was a scholar and an educator. She was an advisor to presidents, as Barbara said, but she was also, you know, referenced by today's Supreme Court. So we got in touch with Barbara and we asked to learn more about the project, the renovation of the house. And then we talked a little bit about our charitable focus area, and it's encapsulated with our Living Legacy Initiative. And it's our commitment to help preserve and make accessible cultural and historical information, world artifacts and treasures.
Yeah, tell us what you do. I mean, this is not a you store it place. That's not who you are.
No, we're not a historic place.
You store it.
Our company was founded 61 years ago, and we're most often recognized by our white and blue trucks and our white and blue boxes. We store documents, financial services, healthcare, government, information and data. And a couple of years ago, we decided to develop a strategic funding focus, and we thought, well, it should be in preservation. It's what we do. We protect people's vital assets every day, and Pauline Murray is an asset that needs to be protected, preserved, and made accessible so more people can learn about her in the future.
So one of the projects that you've taken on is after the Boston bombing, you actually gathered up some of the material there, right?
That's true. It's one of our other partners. We're happy to report that we were able to come in and provide support for all of the thousands of condolence items that were left after the bombing 2 years ago, and we helped clean them up. We have them in a storage facility outside of Boston, and then we helped put on an exhibit so more people could come and learn about the aftermath of the event.
And the interesting thing about Pauli Murray is that she was a bit of a collector. She's got plenty of stuff, right?
Well, we're really good at helping people keep their stuff in a safe place.
Yeah, and so, but what stuff is available? I mean, what are you gathering and where are you finding it? The kinds of material that you're getting.
You mean with Pauli Murray?
Pauli Murray, yeah.
Well, Pauli Murray, we're going to let them. They're the experts.
Yeah. So tell us about that, Barbara.
So it's interesting, Frank, just the other day on the construction site, we found a light fixture. May not be quite back to 1910, but a very old piece, and we're beginning to uncover those kinds of things. Pauli Murray was, to be honest, a huge pack rat. She kept everything. She kept all the drafts of her papers. Remember, she wrote on a manual typewriter. She kept drafts of her books. She kept, there are 900 photographs in Pauli's collection. And we're lucky that she was thoughtful about that and decided early on that they needed to be archived. So all of that material is actually in Alicia's hometown in Boston at the Schlesinger Library for Women's History, which is part of the Radcliffe and Harvard University system. So researchers can come anytime now and go look through her papers, read through her journals. I, in preparation for the exhibition, for example, I looked at all of her tax returns. I wanted to get a sense of what her real life was like. So I was able to make copies of all that information and then figure out, well, what did that tell me about what her life was like? So we're thankful to the archivists up there in Boston.
And now, starting tonight at the Scrap Exchange, you can see some of that and some of what she saved, because she did have a real consciousness about how important it is to have an image, to preserve those images and identify yourself in the community. Tonight's the opening of a new exhibit about Pauli Murray's life and relationship to Durham. It's called Pauli Murray, Imp, Crusader, Dude, Priest. And I'm joined now by Courtney Reed Eaton, an exhibition director at the Center for Documentary Studies. Courtney, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
Tell us about this exhibit and some of the photographs we'll see.
Well, you're not going to see photographs framed on the wall. As a curator, and Barbara and I have worked together for a long time, so Barbara has a really particular curatorial style. She's interested in really presenting as much information as possible. So rather than photographs that are just framed and hanging on the wall with captions, there's a timeline that includes a lot of Pauli's family photographs. So you get to see her family of origin, photographs of her aunts, photographs of her her grandparents, and then of significant incidents in her life, when she was in Ghana, when she was ordained a priest. And so those all move along a timeline, and they're all sort of not really collaged. That's not really the right word, but sort of moving together through space. But then there are these four banners that that punctuate the title, because she had this album that is in the collection, that's called The Life and Times of an American Called Pauli Murray. So this is an album that she created herself with photographs and ephemera that she'd collected over the early part of her adult life. And Barbara chose images from that album that we then used as banners in the exhibition. So one is the imp. One is the crusader, one is the dude, and one is the priest.
Well, you know, we talked about this, Barbara, and I want to hear the story about how you found these photographs and her consciousness of the various images that she bore and was projecting. But I also want to hear in her own voice her consciousness. And this, again, is from an interview with Pauli Murray, where she talks about her relationship with her aunts and her sort of growing consciousness of her many identities.
In my house, I always heard about the race. You can't keep this race down. This race is going to show the world yet. The race. And so I called my aunts race women. I mean, there was that sense of loyalty and dedication to the advancement of the race. And so there wasn't, you know, there wasn't a negative feeling about my racial identity in my house. And yet this strange tension between acute awareness of a mixed ancestry and this devotion to the race.
Pauli Murray from a 1976 interview. Barbara Lau is here. Tell us again the story of the photographs you found and how you found them, because I think that has a direct bearing on her understanding of who she was.
Well, as Courtney mentioned, there was this amazing album and this idea of what does it mean to project your own image in the world. And we really wanted in the exhibit to let Pauli Murray tell you the story of herself, as opposed to, say, someone from the outside who's putting a spin on it, particularly. And so we chose these photographs. There's a whole series of them, right? So there's the imp, the crusader, the priest, the dude. There's the vagabond. There's the poet.
Where do these titles come from?
So these titles are actually given to them by Pauli. So in the album itself, you have this picture that she's obviously posed and had someone take. Every picture is in a very specific location with a specific outfit, a specific look. And then she literally writes the name of it below the photograph. So the imp, 1931. And the imp, by the way, has an exclamation point after it, right? Or the dude, or the vagabond. I mean, each one of them sort of exploring as she was in her 20s. So exploring these ideas of who is she going to be in the world? What difference is she going to make? What kind of life does she want to live?
There's also an interview with Pauli and also North Carolina's own Charles Carrold, right?
It's really an amazing thing. It's the only video so far that we've found. It was done in 1977 on the occasion of Pauli offering the Eucharist for the first time in the same church that her grandmother had been baptized as a slave. And so Charles Carrold's covering this, but he sits down with her. And so you really get to hear from her. And we've chosen a short clip from that interview to share in the exhibit that really allows Pauli to tell you a little bit about her own personality, her own quest for this integrated body, mind, and spirit, and her own struggles.
And the complexity of clearing the rights for that makes it impossible for us to do. So you'll have to go to the Scrap Exchange to see that and to hear that. Yeah.
I wanted to say, this is Courtney again, that church, by the way, is Chapel of the Cross, which is on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. So another very significant
Local regional landmark.
Yeah.
And why the Scrap Exchange? It's an interesting location for this exhibit. Tell us about that.
Well, it is in the neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about 6 blocks from the house. One of the things that's really important in the Scrap Exchange are themes like resilience, creative problem solving. I mean, how much more aligned could you be with Pauli Murray? But it was important for us to bring the exhibit home, to try to bring it to the neighborhood. We've developed a whole set of curricular materials for 3rd, 4th, and 8th graders when they study North Carolina history. So we're hoping that lots of school children will come. The Scrap Exchange is within walking distance of 3 different schools. We just felt like it made sense there. There's not a lot of places, a big gallery spaces really available in Durham. And so it was a really great marriage for us.
And this one stays up until December, right?
December 12th, yeah. And it's open 7 days a week. So, and it's fully free. Come anytime.
So what are your hopes for the Pauli Murray project going forward?
Well, we're really excited about the house and having a place. So really grounding her story in this place, creating a national destination for visitors, creating a place for school children and other people to come and learn about her. But just learning about her, just celebrating her is not enough. Really, it's our job to move that vision forward, to nurture the next generation of Pauli Murrays, and to think about helping her in this quest to create this world in which someone like Pauli and all the rest of us can show up as ourselves all the time.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Barbara Lau is the director of the Pauli Murray Project. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Courtney Reed Eaton, Exhibitions Director at Duke Center for Documentary Study. Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you, Frank.
And Alicia Perdue is with us as well. She is the Manager of Community Engagement at Iron Mountain, a storage and information management company that's partnering with the Pauli Murray Project. Thanks, Alicia.
Thank you.
A ceremony celebrating the new partnership and opening the new exhibit happens tonight, 6 o'clock, the Scrap Exchange at Durham. You can find out more about that at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a man whose name you've heard often on public radio. He's not a reporter. He's not a host. He is a composer. B.J. Lederman is next. Stay tuned.